This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Tomorrow at this time, we look at how Muslim women around the world are reinterpreting their religion to take on new roles and new rights in society. That's tomorrow on Talk of the Nation. Today, we're going to switch the subject and talk about daily life in Iraq and take your phone calls. What do you want to know about the ins and outs of getting by in Baghdad? Do you want to hear about schools, women, roads, food, electricity? Join the conversation. Our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. And joining us is NPR foreign correspondent Guy Raz. He spent four of the past 6 months reporting from Iraq. He returned to London this past Saturday and joins us from his office there. And Guy, thanks very much for being with us.
It's a pleasure, Neil.
For months now, Guy, we've been hearing spot reports of everything from suicide bomb attacks to schools being rebuilt. It's a little hard to get the big picture from all of these different fragments. How chaotic is everyday life in Baghdad?
Neil, I think it depends a lot on how one looks at the situation in Iraq and in Baghdad in particular. When I first arrived in the city in April, it looked very different than the way it looks today. There have been improvements in power, in electricity, in water distribution, even in sort of municipal public improvements like trash pickup and road cleaning. At the same time, there are a lot of problems. I mean, there is a tremendous amount of violence. And in a sense, I would say that you could make the argument that civil society in Baghdad itself really broke down in April and hasn't really recovered. You mentioned roads and traffic in your introduction. I think that is a very good example of the breakdown of sort of civil society and law and order. The idea that nobody's really working for the greater good yet. Nobody's following traffic rules. Nobody's sort of paying attention to lights that turn red or to police officers who are trying to direct traffic. Just to get across a city, it takes a good hour, sometimes an hour and a half. And it can be very frustrating, particularly as a reporter, to try and go about your daily work. Trying to get a story can often take hours and hours.
Where are all those people driving to?
It's a very, 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 very hard question to answer. I'm not entirely sure because, of course, 70% of the population in Baghdad is out of work. But people seem to be going places. I mean, shops are opening. People are selling satellites for televisions and television sets and radios and electronic equipment, things that are being imported from Saudi Arabia and Kuwait and Jordan. There is activity. There is a vibrancy there. But at the same time, there's an underbelly. There's something else happening there that for some reason has sort of created this population that is in many ways quite resentful and hostile towards the U.S. occupation.
What do you see of local government? I mean, is there is it developing? And I'm not just talking about Baghdad here, but outside as well.
It is. I mean, I think that Baghdad is certainly a different story. I think it's important to make that point. Baghdad is very different from other parts of the country. If you go up to the north, if you go to Mosul, if you go to Basra in the south, or to some of the Kurdish cities like Erbil, there are major differences, and there are attempts really to sort of revitalize the cities and to try to get the populations involved in some of the city improvements, to try to give them sort of a stake in making things work. Baghdad is in itself a bigger problem in some ways because, of course, it's the seat of the federal government. And in other ways, the overall control is still in the hands of the occupation authorities. So in some ways, you could say that Iraqis now in charge or sort of those who are playing a role in trying to govern the city are sort of limited in what they can do. They don't have a lot of money to spend, very little money to spend. They don't have power to enforce the rules. So for them, it's quite a difficult process trying to revitalize the city, to try to get the public on board.
How much of the economy that is going on there is sort of this occupation economy? I mean, catering to the troops who do have money.
A lot of it is. I mean, a tremendous amount of it is. And we haven't even begun to see the beginning of it. I mean, we know that the Congress just appropriated $20 billion, but that money won't begin to flow into Iraq until early next year. So, you know, despite all the talk about reconstruction, the real reconstruction process hasn't yet begun. There are reconstruction projects all over the country, but they're very small-scale projects. And in Baghdad, you see construction all over the city. You see soccer fields being replanted or schools being refurbished or buildings going up or hotels going up, internet cafes. But these are all very small-scale projects. They're certainly projects that are having an impact, that are producing, that are creating jobs. But I think the real impact of all of these major infrastructure projects, we'll start to see the result of that next year when the big money starts to flow in.
What questions do you have? Our phone number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And our email address is totn@npr.org. And let's talk with Kim, who's on the line from Salt Lake City, Utah.
Hi.
Hi.
Hello.
I'm just calling to find out how feasible it would be for someone to go visit Iraq as a visitor within the next year, or is that still a couple of years away?
That's a very interesting question. In fact, many Iraqis who I've met in the United States and in Europe have asked me that. How do we go and see our families there? There are no visa restrictions. Americans can go there now, and Europeans can go there now. In fact, I think that there are very few visa restrictions on anyone from anywhere in the world. There is a land route from Jordan and also from Kuwait. Kuwait is a bit more difficult because you need a visa to enter Kuwait as an American citizen. But you could fly to Jordan, conceivably, find a taxi. There are taxi services and drive to Baghdad. Now, I wouldn't recommend it just now. I mean, the country is still fairly volatile, and it's not an entirely pleasant place to be as a foreigner at all times. It can be done. I would say that you should do some research before you go and know what you're getting into, because particularly that road from Jordan to Baghdad is an unsafe one. There have been many, many incidents on the road. In fact, many colleagues of mine have been attacked and have been robbed on that road. NPR now is sending their reporters via a flight from Amman, but that flight is only open to reporters and to people who are involved with the coalition provisional authority there in Baghdad.
Hmm. Oh, interesting. That's really helpful. I have a son who's going to be there after the first of the year.
Ah, so that's your interest.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay. We wish him and you the best, Kim.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Let's go now to Eleanor, who's with us, and Eleanor's with us from Anchorage, Alaska.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air, Eleanor.
I'd like him to talk about public relations in Baghdad. Mm-hmm. I'd like to know more about the media altogether. Radio stations, television stations, and what sort of things they're broadcasting.
And throw in newspapers, if you would, Guy.
Well, yeah. Papers is at the bottom of the list.
Okay.
Because I've already heard about some, you know, it's the radio and television. I'm wondering about the public feeling against America.
Okay, let's get an answer from Guy Ross.
I want to know if radio and television is doing anything to ease the situation.
Yeah, it's a very, very good question, Eleanor, and a very important one, because I think that there is a perception that there is sort of this blanket sort of negative feeling toward America and Americans that's held by Iraqis. And it's very, very difficult to explain, because in some ways it's far more complex than that. It's so complex that I think it's even difficult for reporters like me who've spent so much time there to try to convey it or to articulate it. There are U.S.-backed and U.S.-funded radio and television stations now in operation in Iraq. There's the Iraqi Media Network, which is a television network that has been set up and funded by the U.S.-led Coalition Provisional Authority. They broadcast news, television programs, documentaries, etc. It's hard to say how widespread its reach is. I mean, Iraqis are now bombarded with information. For the first time, they have access to satellites, to free information, the free flow of information, the internet, and as Neil mentioned, newspapers. I mean, there's been this proliferation of newspapers and magazines in Baghdad, in Iraq, for that matter. So in some ways, the U.S.-backed Iraqi media network has to compete with Arabic language stations like Al Jazeera, like Al Arabiya, which come from some of the Gulf states around Iraq. Those stations have a reputation in the region. Many people in Iraq watch them. So it's very difficult to say what kind of an impact the Iraqi media network is having. There certainly is an effort. I mean, there certainly is an attempt to produce credible news that's not propaganda. And I think they're doing a good job. I've seen some of it. But of course, it's very difficult to know whether all Iraqis are watching it.
We're speaking with NPR correspondent Guy Raza, just back from another tour in Iraq, and he's speaking with us from his office in London. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's go now to John, who's on the line with us from Macon, Georgia.
Yes, hi, how are you?
Very well, thanks.
I just had a quick comment and actually a question. I guess I should pose the question first is, to our guests is what I'd like to know what kind of progress I'd like to emphasize or have him emphasize, if he could, the progress that he has seen. I know we were just talking about it a little bit, and he made mention to it when he first came on. And second, I'd like to also put it in a historical perspective. I'm sure people have heard this before, but when we looked at what happened to in post-war Germany, how many years it took to get to where Iraq is today in just a couple of months, it seems to me today we want everything yesterday. And there's not enough focus on some of the progress that's been made. Thank you very much.
Well, thanks, John. So, Guy, you say power's improved and mm-hmm. water's improved. How much?
Well, I think throughout the country, power is at pre-war levels. So when you consider a city like Basra, for example, which is in the south, Basra is a very good example. Basra is a city where the majority of people were used to brownouts and blackouts for the past 15, 20 years. Now, for the first time, they have 24-hour power in that city. So for the people of Basra, there has been a substantial, noticeable improvement, as well in Mosul, which is in the north, as well as in Erbil, also in the north, Nasiriyah in the south-central part of the country. Baghdad is the problem. Baghdad is a city of 7.5 million people. It's a city that was used to sort of being a privileged city. It was a city that received 24-hour power, very clean water, good public services, many times at the expense of these other cities in the country. So now, for the first time, you have the power being distributed more evenly, I guess you could say. And in some ways, it's forced the people of Baghdad to suffer, because now they're finding themselves sitting in darkened homes without any electricity for 3, 4, 5 hours a day. That said, there has been a substantial improvement since April, when the city fell to U.S. forces. And there really is an effort to try and get that up and running very quickly, because I think there's a sense among the U.S. authorities in Iraq that once you have the power restored, then you can begin the process, really begin the process of reconstruction. You cannot revitalize an economy without power. You cannot revitalize an economy without a communication system like a telecommunication system, which is still down in most of the country.
Guy, we wanted to ask you on a slightly different topic. Potential donors to Iraqi reconstruction are meeting in Madrid later this week. You'll be covering that event for NPR. What can you tell us about the meeting's participants and what their hopes are for this conference?
This is a very, very important conference. It's taking place in Madrid. As you know, Neil, the Congress allocated $20 billion to Iraq's reconstruction. The White House is hoping that the international community will pony up another $40 billion. That is, all total, $60 billion is the estimated price tag it'll take to completely reconstruct the country, to reconstruct Iraq's power supply and water facilities, and to rebuild some of the buildings damaged by years of neglect and even by the war. That said, there is, I think it's very unlikely that that $40 billion will be raised over these next 2 days. We know that the Europeans will probably contribute about $200 million. The White House was hoping for obviously a much more substantial contribution. We know that Japan will contribute about $1.3 billion. But really, in the end, I think that the Iraqi delegates who come to this meeting looking for donors to sort of make some kind of substantial contributions, I think they will leave the conference quite disappointed.
NPR's Guy Raz speaking with us from his office in London. We'll look forward to your coverage of the conference donors meeting in Madrid. Guy, thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Neil.
In Washington, I'm Neil Conan, NPR News.